The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored, so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline for the special section, CEO of the Year and C-Suite Awards. These CEOs and top-level executives are determined to push forward with growth plans despite challenges. And the question and answer articles on each winner appear inside. We'll read the two that have a local birthplace. Yvonne Coleman, Discover Durham. Title, Chief Operating Officer, Birthplace, Wake County. Family, daughter, Naima Lewis. Son, Atiba Rory. Three grandsons. Education, BA, NC Central University. MA, American University. Company description, Marketing and Sales Agency for Durham. How is your role important to the overall success of your organization? I was responsible for leading and nurturing a great team to reach all organizational goals. I was instrumental in steering the organization through tough economic times and to reach visitors and residents with important information that would influence both their attitudes about Durham and to encourage them to visit. Under my leadership, the cash reserve increased from 0.9% in 2009 to 32% in 2019. In addition, we developed numerous initiatives in workforce development, relocated our offices with a state-of-the-art award-winning visitor information center, and started the Durham Sports Commission, which I supervised. What were your greatest professional achievements in the past year? Facilitating the first state-approved hospitality apprenticeship program in Durham, building a solid cash reserve for the organization, and producing the commissioning and performance of the Durham Anthem for Durham 150th celebration. What's the greatest obstacle or challenge you faced in your career? Most of my career, I was the first or the only African-American or the only African-American female in the role. The greatest obstacle was the constant requirement to prove to others that I could do what was necessary to achieve multiple objectives. What civic organizations are you involved with and how do you serve them? Chair, NCCU Hospitality Management Program Advisory Committee. Board member, Man Bites Dog Theater Fund. Member, Durham Technical College Hospitality Program Advisory Committee. Who do you consider to be your mentor? Halsey North, since 1977. And what do you do to relax? Social dancing and reading. And also we have Wes Pollard of Get Spiffy, title CFO, birthplace Raleigh, family, sons Matt and Adam. Education, BA, Business Management, NC State University, Masters of Accounting, UNC Chapel Hill, company description, on-demand car care technology and services. How is your role important to the overall success of your organization? I started as the CFO of Get Spiffy in 2016. During that time, we have expanded from two markets to approximately 20. I have worked closely with CEO Scott Wingo and President Carl Murphy on fundraising for the company to allow this rapid growth. What were your greatest professional achievements in the past year? In 2019, we acquired Your Location Lubrication in Orlando, Florida. This acquisition more than doubled our annual revenue. This deal was negotiated and closed rapidly, so we had to quickly and put together a plan to successfully integrate the two companies. What's the greatest obstacle or challenge you faced? Working through uncontrollable external events that negatively impact the CFO's ability to raise capital, including September 11, the financial crisis, and the current COVID-19 crisis. What civic organizations are you involved in? I've been involved in numerous organizations as my kids grew up, including serving on the baseball committee for the West Raleigh Exchange Club, coaching youth sports, helping with school fundraisers, going on field trips, etc. As my kids have grown older, I encourage their participation in charity organizations such as the Miracle League of the Triangle. Who do you consider to be your mentor? Early in my career, I worked with Jeff Barber at PwC, who was the managing partner at the time. He taught me to do things the right way early on. I've also been fortunate enough to work for several successful local entrepreneurs, including Jeff Grady at Digital Lifestyle Outfitters, Brian Baberny at Issuer Direct Corporation, and most recently Scott Wingo at Get Spiffy, each of whom have taught me invaluable business lessons. What do you do to relax? Exercise, spend time at Wrightsville Beach, and watch a lot of baseball. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Major tennis pickleball site still underway despite COVID. Plans for a tennis and pickleball facility in Briar Creek are plowing ahead despite the pandemic and the likely lack of funds from Wake County's interlocal agreement. Rob Autry and his partner, Jason DeGroff, had hoped to break ground this year and open next year on a project that would cost $65 million to $70 million. The project was seeking $20.6 million in interlocal funding. But those interlocal dollars melted away as the pandemic ravaged the hotel and restaurant industry. So Autry and DeGroff pivoted to a project with less indoor space, but still with 34 tennis courts, 29 pickleball courts, and 12 courts for the fast-growing sport of paddle, a cross between tennis and racquetball. "It's growing like mad," Autry said of paddle. It's bigger in Spain than tennis. It's bigger than soccer in Argentina. The project is now expected to cost north of $50 million, with soft costs possibly pushing it to $60 million. Autry is seeking investments from family funds, wealthy individuals, and brands that could become strategic partners. "We've had more success in seeking capital since March," Autry says. "I think people want to invest in things they enjoy. That's been great." Autry also notes that sports such as tennis are seeing resurgence as people are more likely to go outside for exercise. Golf, for example, has seen a surge. Raleigh Mayor Marianne Baldwin, who visited the site September 23, says the project will provide more opportunities for sports, bring in tournaments to drive economic growth, and create public park space in an area that needs it. "The potential is tremendous," she says. "When you think about post-COVID, this is going to be unbelievable." New app helps detect exposure to COVID-19. For those worried about whether they have been exposed to COVID-19, 2020 has finally caught up, and now there's an app for that. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services is launching an exposure notification app called Slow COVID NC, which is now available for free on the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store. The app alerts users when they may have been exposed to someone who tested positive for COVID-19, leveraging Google and Apple's own exposure notification systems. The department stresses that the app is completely anonymous and does not store or share personal information. Dr. Mandy Cohen, the NCDHHS secretary, calls the app a practical step each of us can take to protect ourselves, our loved ones, and our state. Wilmington's boom now includes major project on river. A Raleigh developer is looking to tap into the revitalization of downtown Wilmington with a massive apartment project just weeks from opening its first units. In October, DeWitt Carolinas will open the first phase of Pier 33, a six-story, 286-unit apartment complex on the Cape Fear River. "We are so proud of this project and the level of sophistication it brings to downtown Wilmington," DeWitt Carolinas president Everett Daniel says. The development includes a pool, fitness facility, clubhouse, business center, and unimpeded views of the Riverwalk, Daniel says. The property also offers 20,000 square feet of commercial space. The opening will feature the first 125 apartments, with the rest expected to open by the end of the year. Rates start at $1,129 per month. A Georgia man faces jail time for duping Augusta National. There's no doubt getting a ticket to the Masters golf tournament is tough, but a Georgia man who cheated the system is facing time in a federal prison. The U.S. Attorney's Office says Stephen Michael Freeman bought a bulk mailing list and then used those identities to create multiple accounts to apply for tickets on Augusta National Golf Club's website, dating back to 2013. His parents and his sister were involved. He used fake documents to get the tickets and resold them for a big profit. Freeman, 42, of Athens, Georgia, now faces 28 months in prison and has to pay $157,493 in restitution. Durham's Spoon Flower makes connection to Hollywood star. Durham textile printer Spoon Flower has a new partner, Honest Company, which is led by actress entrepreneur Jessica Alba. Honest Company reached out to us back in May for help on creating a series of five virtual baby showers to honor frontline healthcare heroes, Spoonflower CEO Michael Jones explains. They partnered with March of Dimes to identify the virtual shower recipients and engaged Spoonflower, Urban Stems, and Amazon to deliver decor, gifts, and new parent necessities. It all started there. Then the relationship expanded with a Spoonflower shop featuring wallpaper products with growth charts, wall decals, pennant banners, and other products designed by Honest with nurseries in mind. It's a very collaborative partnership, and we're looking forward to doing more together in the future, Joan says. And finally, now up for bid, iconic Chapel Hill restaurant items. An era came to a sad end this week as an iconic location auctioned off items. Spanky's had been at the corner of Franklin and Columbia Streets from 1977 until it closed in 2018. The Chapel Hill Restaurant Group changed the concept to Lula's, but that didn't work out. So, September 22nd through 23rd, an online auction carried off the remnants of the place, from plates and pots to a circular bar. It's sad news, and there's the sense that more of this is coming. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Lauren Onosorge's page on finance and technology. Truist Venture Chief details how to land capital. Truist Ventures, a new venture capital division out of Charlotte-based Truist Bank, is looking for startups. Its first big move was a $6 million lead investment in Veeam, a global payments company based in San Francisco. But it's eyeing a robust pipeline of other opportunities, says Vanessa Vreeland, who is leading the new division, and some of those could be in the Triangle, where innovators have been building an entrepreneurship cluster that's well known to the Charlotte-based bank that formed through the merger of SunTrust and BB&T last year. Really, we are looking to help Truist shape the future of finance, she says. We're really looking for the thing that can help Truist achieve parity with our peer banks and also leapfrog the competition to be at the forefront of the financial services industry. While much of the portfolio will likely fall into the traditional fintech arena, Truist isn't stopping there, she says. It could target adjacent companies, say a firm tasked with helping millennials move across the country. They are moving on their own. They're getting a mortgage from Truist. Are there ways we can provide ancillary services to make that move better for them, Vreeland says. Truist is open to technologies completely outside the scope of fintech today, she says, pointing to biometrics as a possibility. We might want to explore how we can use that for point of sale, ATM withdrawals, Vreeland adds. For entrepreneurs who think they fit that net, she suggests going to the Truist Ventures website and sending an email. She says entrepreneurs shouldn't be afraid to ask what Truist can bring to the table. Vreeland says Truist brings speed, agility, and provides great access across our organization to industry experts. How Wake County plans to land workers at Stripe, Facebook. Yet another San Francisco company is offering its employees a cash payment to leave costly cities for cheaper locales such as the Triangle. Payments firm Stripe is now offering eligible employees who move out of high-priced cities such as San Francisco, Seattle, and New York a one-time payment of $20,000. While those employees would also get a 10% cut to their base salary, their cash could go a lot further in a city such as Raleigh, according to local economic developers, and they want to make sure those workers know it too. Economic development, in our minds, is much more than business recruitment, says Michael Haley, executive director of Wake County Economic Development, noting that tech talent attraction has been something we've been focused on for some time, primarily because we know talent is such a key driver. Talent is critical to the success of the region. So Haley and economic developers like him are brainstorming ways to tell the region's story and to get their message in front of employees who suddenly have choices about where they plug in their laptops. Luring more technology workers to the state does more than increase the local tax base, Haley says. It augments the talent pool already credited with helping the region with major projects, from Bandwidth's new headquarters to Policy Genius's new Durham hub. He says the county has aggressive plans to market itself. you have to tell your story and tell this top-tier talent of all the opportunities that are available here, he says. It's a great story to tell. First Citizens moves up in bank list. Deposits in the Raleigh Metro's top 10 banks ticked up amid COVID-19, according to new data from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which analyzes bank deposits through June 30 of this year. They also show big headway for First Citizens Bank, which after ranking fourth last year, passed Bank of America for the third spot in the Metro. The combination of BB&T and SunTrust too made an impact. Truist, totaling $6.8 billion, is the second biggest bank in the Metro, after longtime leader Wells Fargo. Last year, BB&T and SunTrust totaled $4.2 billion and $1.6 billion, respectively. Wells Fargo went from more than $6.8 billion in the Metro in 2019 to more than $8.4 billion in 2020. Morrisville startup raises $19 million. A cybersecurity startup in Morrisville has announced a $19 million funder. Next up, growth, including jobs. Jupiter One, which aims to automate cybersecurity asset management and make risk analysis and compliance reporting easier and cheaper, already counts Reddit, Databricks, and OMD as customers. With the $19 million Series A round, led by Bain Capital Ventures, with additional investment from Rain Capital, Life, Omic, and individuals, the plan is to increase the customer list. CEO Ergang Zhang credits the firm's product for its ability to secure such a sum in the midst of a pandemic. The reason for us to be able to secure this amount of funding at this time is primarily because of the product that we built and the market and where we are headed from here, he says. They think this is a multi-billion dollar potential opportunity. And it's one that can help the company scale for at least the next couple of years, Zhang says. Much of the money will go toward marketing and sales, and that means hiring new team members. And finally, RDU Airlines still impacted by pandemic. Traffic is ticking up at Raleigh-Durham International Airport, but it's still dramatically behind when compared to last year. Just over 319,000 passengers traveled through the airport in August, up 4.1% from July of 2020. We're starting to see our customers come back, Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority CEO Michael Landguth says. But passenger traffic is still down 75% year over year, he adds. The solution to a faster recovery? Wear a mask, says Landguth. And next we have our continuing series, The Promise Of. The headline for this week, Building a Legacy. Gloria Sheely is intent on developing a future for her community and her business. And this article is written by Connie Gentry. About this project, the project name is based on a historical reference relating to Union Army leader William Sherman's promise of giving 40 acres to slaves after the Civil War. That promise, which came to be known as 40 Acres and a Mule, never came through as President Andrew Johnson rescinded the order after taking office. A closer look at the company name, the Danielle Company, location 123 West Main Street, Suite 220, Durham. Founder, Gloria Sheely, President and CEO. A year founded, 1995 in Michigan, moved to Durham in 2006. Employees, 9. Subcontractors, 70-plus. Among the people at one of the early protests in downtown Durham was Gloria Sheely, founder, CEO, and president of the Danielle Company, a multi-million dollar construction firm. Geared up with sanitizer and a mask and intent on maintaining her 6 feet of social distancing, she blended into the crowd. The protest was, in terms of any disruption, non-eventful, Sheely recounts. There were maybe 400 people, mostly young, but of all ages, all ethnicities. The young people were in charge, running the program, and I salute them. They are the generation we should be prepared to give this world to, and it should be a safe place where they might be healthy and prosper. That same commitment to build a legacy for the next generation was behind the vision of the Danielle Company, founded in 1995 and named for her daughter, Aisha Danielle, in hopes she might grow up with an interest in joining the business. It needed to be her choice, something she was passionate about, Sheely says. Now married with a newborn son, Aisha Sarfo is a vice president at the company, where her expertise in behavior analysis and performance management positioned the company to expand into business consulting. Construction remains the company's primary focus, and its project pipeline has grown from $92 million in 2019 to $120 million this year. After starting in 1995 in Michigan, the company moved to Durham in 2006, completing projects from the Midwest to the BMW facility in South Carolina. In recent years, projects have been concentrated in the Triangle, including work for Wake County schools, universities, and local governments. Either everything is going on all at once, or it's hurry up and wait. We're in the everything at once mode, Sheely says, noting a middle school project in Fuquay-Varina that's about to start, a biotech building at NC State with a greenhouse on its roof that's slated to finish in 2022, an upcoming renovation at Peabody Hall on the UNC Chapel Hill campus, work at Wake Tech, and numerous projects for Durham City and County. People are putting out RFPs, and we're in pursuit for projects that start in 2021 or 2022. The strategy is to present your proposal and your team in such a way that you get a ticket to the dance, she says with a laugh. It's that invitation to interview that starts the process of what might become a lasting relationship. We pursue relationships, not projects. Projects are a residual benefit of relationships. Relationships take you through the good, the bad, and the in-between. That applies to owner relationships as well as partner and subcontractor relationships. While her business has held strong this year, some of the smaller subcontractors have been forced to close. Supplier diversity and working with small businesses in the communities they serve is part of the company's DNA. We have a responsibility to lift others and help them become engaged, Sheely says. This is particularly true now when COVID-19 has made it even harder to stay in business. It gets down to the economics and the issues of systemic racism as it relates to access to capital and even as it relates to access to relationships, she explains. Unfortunately, the federal PPP and EIDL program were not geared to small and diverse businesses. If you did not already have a relationship, and sometimes even if you did, you were not at the top of the heap for that opportunity. The larger bank she worked with didn't provide a PPP loan, but Sheely was able to get a PPP loan through Self-Help Credit Union. I appreciated the help because I didn't get the right response from my payroll bank. Although I didn't bank at Self-Help, there was some relationship there. They deserve credit for being intentional about embracing the community. Patrice Gilmore, who serves as chair for the board of directors of the United Minority Contractors of North Carolina, UMCNC, says, "This is a relationship-driven business. Anybody in this industry will tell you that." Gilmore works at DPR Construction, where she leads the supplier diversity program nationwide. Her advice for larger companies like DPR to small subcontractors is to remain open to new relationships. "Constantly work on your relationships and keep the door open to new relationships," she says. "That is what will sustain your business in times like this. It's all about relationship building." Sheely, a former chair of UMCNC and one of its founding members, was also the first woman to serve as president of the National Association of Minority Contractors, NAMC, and was inducted into its Hall of Fame in 2015. She serves as a lifetime board member at NAMC and remains on the advisory board of UMCNC. "It has to be a very intentional process to change economic inequality," Sheely says. "We're not just talking about policy. It's also about a paradigm change in the way people think about the community of humanity. If we don't have leadership at all levels, local, state, and federal, that have an authentic understanding, appreciation, and interest in the communities they reside in, you won't see policy that benefits the well-being of everyone." She is in the second year of a 3-year PhD program at Benedictine University, working toward a degree in values-driven leadership. Her advice is always be prepared to say no if opportunities or values don't align with yours. "Have a long-term strategy and not a short-term goal," Sheely says. And along with the article, there are two big numbers, $92 million, the collective value of the Danielle Company's projects in 2019, and $120 million, the collective value of the Danielle Company's projects in 2020. And in the news section of the Promise Of section, nonprofit entities partnering on program. Two nonprofit organizations have partnered to provide minority-owned and micro-businesses with a technical assistance program that will help owners manage both business and personal finances. Carolina Community Impact, Inc., or CCI, and Consumer Education Services, Inc., CESI, will offer a coaching and educational initiative that provides a review of business and personal credit, a critique of business plans, and assistance with the business financial statements. CCI, which is a community development financial institution, will continue to provide capital to small business owners. Joe Battle, manager of the initiative for CCI, said this partnership will enable them to also equip clients with skills, tools, and knowledge to succeed in both their personal and business finances. The program is available to all small business owners. However, priority will be given to low-income and minority-owned micro-businesses. 2020 Black Founders event goes virtual. The 5th annual Black Founders Exchange will be held October 7 through 29 and will be entirely virtual. As in years past, the event will provide mentorship and support for Black founders in the startup community from industry experts and investors across the country. 6 North Carolina startups have been selected to participate, including 5 that are based in the Triangle. Coworks, Courtroom 5, Lonewell, Spa Utopia, and SpokeHub. The 6th, Freeman Capital, is based in Charlotte. Programming for the event, which is a collaborative undertaking hosted by Google for Startups and the American Underground Hub, has been determined by a survey to Black founders that identify timely subjects of interest. For 2020, a total of 23 startups have been selected from around the country, and the virtual format will focus on a different topic each week. To date, 32 companies have completed the program and collectively raised more than $23 million. And now we turn to Caleb Harshberger's page on real estate. Work begins on RTP mixed-use destination. Work is underway on a massive mixed-use destination in Research Triangle Park that's set to include as much as 1 million square feet of office space, plus retail, residential, and hotel space. On September 22nd, the Research Triangle Foundation and its partners kicked off Work on Hub RTP, a 43-acre urban district with buildings up to 300 feet tall. The event was held virtually with a video stream live. Plans call for up to 1 million square feet of office space, at least one hotel with up to 275 rooms, around 1,200 residential units, and 75,000 square feet of retail space, according to developer KDC's website. In January, RTF announced its partnership with Dallas-based KDC on the project. It's important to recognize the vision the founders of the park had 50 to 60 years ago and what a huge impact it's had not only on the region, but nationally and internationally, KDC Division President Larry Wilson says. And so this is a big step. The estimated investment for the project is more than $1 billion, according to the Research Triangle Foundation, and it could take up to 30 to 36 months to complete from the start of construction. The 43 acres make up a part of a 100-acre swath of land that the Research Triangle Foundation has slated for future development. KDC is a nationally known developer of corporate build-to-suit campuses. It has worked on projects in RTP since 2006. Wilson previously said, Mid-American Apartment Communities of Memphis, Tennessee is handling the multifamily portion of Hub RTP. Landowners push to rezone parcels. A pair of local landowners have filed plans with the city of Raleigh to rezone a collection of parcels to allow for commercial development across from Jeffries Grove Magnet Elementary School off Creedmoor Road. Earlier this month, an LLC controlled by Elias and Lee Haralambakis filed a request that allows the development of commercial space up to 3 stories with potential uses such as medical, office, or self-storage. The site is made up of 6 parcels totaling 2.4 acres at 6124 Creedmoor Road, north of West Millbrook Road, and currently includes a collection of single-family homes and squat commercial buildings opposite the school. 5 of those parcels are owned by George Snelling, and 1 is owned by the Haralambakis' LLC, according to county records. Filings with the town say development would be limited to 200,000 square feet of space. At a virtual neighborhood meeting in August, representatives for the applicant took questions from nearby residents and property owners. Topics included why the rezoning was requested, the timeline on the project, and setbacks and buffers. Filings don't include the representatives' responses. Owners unveil plans for high-end apartments. The new owners of an aging apartment community near Cameron Village have unveiled dramatic plans to transform the property into a new residential complex. On September 21, partnering firms Atlanta-based Terwilliger Pappas, with offices in Charlotte and Raleigh, and Pacific Coast Capital Partners of California announced their plan to redevelop the Cameron Hills apartments into a new high-end community dubbed Solis Cameron Hills. Plans for the new community call for 315 Class A apartments at 2315 Grant Avenue by J.C. Park and just north of Wade Avenue. The firms bought the property for $16.75 million earlier this month from an LLC controlled by George and Catherine Yelverton of Raleigh. Plans call for a variety of layouts, including studio, one, two, and three apartment bedroom apartments across a collection of primarily three-story buildings complete with covered parking. The plans are similar to redevelopment plans filed last December. Senior living community underway in Wendell. A Houston developer with an expanding footprint in the Triangle has begun work on a new senior living community in Wendell Falls. Last month, David Weekly Homes began work on Encore at Wendell Falls, calling for 179 age-restricted single-story homes in the rapidly growing development in eastern Wake County. The project is situated at the intersection of Pool Road and Big Falls Drive, according to the developer's website. The company says lots will feature 43 and 53-foot home sites, reserved for buyers 55 and older. Amenities at Encore will include a 3,500-square-foot amenity center, pool, gym, yoga room, kitchen, and meeting space. And finally, a Pennsylvania group buys retail space in Cary. A Pennsylvania investment firm splashed down in Cary recently, buying up a collection of properties in a longtime retail center. On September 20, Hamilton Asset Advisors, located near Philadelphia, paid $5.75 million for four properties in the Preston Walk Retail Center, including restaurants and retail space. The properties are situated at 1040, 1080, and 1065 Darrington Drive at the corner of Northwest Cary Parkway and James Jackson Avenue. The purchase also included a small undeveloped parcel on the western side of the properties. The seller, Starwood Properties Trust of Florida, bought the properties for $7.6 million in 2014. Businesses that list these as their addresses include Deer Beer Garden, Cary, Arthur Murray Dance Studio of Cary, Sylvan Learning, and others, according to those companies' websites. Built in 2001, Preston Walk is a retail center developed by the Cary-based Preston Development Company. The center sits down the road from the Park West Village Shopping Center. And now we turn to On Healthcare, Higher Ed, written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. These forces will shape the economy after COVID-19. The global impact the COVID-19 pandemic has had on the world economy is in many ways unimaginable, but researchers at UNC Chapel Hill have teamed up with business leaders in the state to boil down the largest trends shaping the economy, as well as how they might be areas of opportunity. UNC's Keenan Flagler Business School, in partnership with the North Carolina CEO Leadership Forum, recently produced a white paper analyzing the economic trends shaping 2020 and the years to come. The report, Seven Forces Reshaping the Economy, argues that while there is a long list of ways the economy is being affected, many are derivative of seven major trends that can be prescribed policy solutions. The report is careful to note that seven is not a magic number, but that they are the most important trends to be considered by leaders. The COVID-19 pandemic has had a massive impact on how the global economy operates, the report states. Powerful forces are both accelerating long-standing existing trends and driving major new trends. These forces are currently quite pronounced and will persist as long as the pandemic restricts normal activities and will result in lasting consequences. With these forces come winners and losers. According to the report, the seven trends shaping the economy are changes at work, travel and migration patterns, accelerating shifts toward on-demand and at-home retail, shortening and widening of supply chains, renewed focus on diversity, upending of education and child care, shocks to healthcare and pharmaceutical demand, and risk assessment by investors. So what should North Carolina do to harness those changes? UNC Keenan listed a number of policies, including supporting workforce development, employing recent college graduates as teaching assistants and tutors, expanding access to broadband, focusing on existing businesses as opposed to attracting new ones, promoting diversity among suppliers, establishing a task force of North Carolina-based manufacturers, and establishing a task force of fintech leaders and education technologists and gaming industry experts. NC State, small change on food packaging has big impact on nutrition. NC State University researchers say a simple change in packaging on food products could result in more nutritional contents on the shelves of grocery stores across the country. The researchers looked at how voluntary enrollment in the Facts Up Front program, which lists the calories, saturated fat, sugar, and sodium per serving size of food products on relatively large front-of-package labels, could have led to increased incentive for higher nutritional content of food. The results show that having to put the facts on the front of the box led many companies to make the facts a bit better. Across all the food categories in which at least some products adopted the labels, the study found a 12.5% reduction in calories, 12.9% reduction in saturated fat, 12.6% reduction in sugar, and 3.74% reduction in sodium. And now we go to David Pertell's page on business. Bed Bath & Beyond to close Glenwood Avenue store. A Raleigh location is on the list of store closures planned for this year by retailer Bed Bath & Beyond. The store at 6270 Glenwood Avenue in the Pleasant Valley Promenade that also includes Dick's Sporting Goods and Marshall's is one of 63 locations set to close by the end of the year, according to USA Today, which received the list exclusively. In July, New Jersey-based Bed Bath & Beyond announced it would be closing 200 stores over the next 2 years as the company puts more of a focus on online retailing. Also included in the list released September 18 was a store in Concord. In all, stores in 29 states are slated to close by the end of 2020. Bed Bath & Beyond has two other stores in Raleigh, one off Six Forks Road in North Raleigh and the other by Triangle Town Center. It also has a location in Cary, two in Durham, and one in Holly Springs. Like most retailers, the company, which operates around 1,500 stores nationwide, has been hit hard by the pandemic. It saw net sales decline nearly 50% for its quarter ending May 30 when compared to the same period last year, from $2.57 billion to $1.3 billion. In the spring, the company converted a quarter of its stores to fulfillment centers to support a surge in online sales. Report: these Triangle colleges offer the best value. The Triangle's three largest universities are once again ranked among the state's best value colleges. That's according to financial planning website Smart Assets' sixth annual ranking of the state's best value colleges. Duke University, UNC Chapel Hill, and NC State University lead the way in the top 10 best value colleges in North Carolina. It was the same order for last year's ranking, with Duke at the top of the list. Also making the list this year were East Carolina University and Elon University. Duke graduates reported an average starting salary of $71,100, more than $16,000 more than UNC. For NC State graduates, the figure was $57,300. But Duke, being a private school, was by far the leader in highest tuition at around $55,000 for students. Blue Devil students, though, also reported the highest amount for average scholarships and grants, $45,500. Wake Forest University had the second highest average starting salary at $60,700. For East Carolina, the starting salary figure was $48,400. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to a better world inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. And we'll start with the column written this week by David Heenan, who is the Vice President for Public Policy and Advocacy for the North Carolina Center for Nonprofits. The headline, Key Guidelines as the Election Nears. With early voting starting in less than a month, the North Carolina Center for Nonprofits has been fielding many questions about the types of election-related activities nonprofits can and can't do. Under federal tax law, 501c3, nonprofits can't endorse or oppose candidates or political parties and can't make campaign contributions. But charitable nonprofits can engage in nonpartisan election-related activities. Even though businesses don't have a legal obligation to remain nonpartisan like nonprofits do, many still prefer to steer clear of politics, just like nonprofits risk losing the trust of their donors, volunteers, and the public if they take partisan positions. Many businesses would alienate some clients and customers if they are tied too closely to particular candidates or political parties. To help Triangle nonprofit and business leaders, the center is sharing election season tips for nonprofits and adding how these might be relevant for business leaders. Should nonprofits encourage people to vote? Absolutely. Nonprofits are among the most trusted institutions in North Carolina. When nonprofits provide nonpartisan information about elections, people listen. Likewise, businesses can be effective messengers about voting since they have the respect of their clients and customers. Nonprofits and businesses can help citizens in two important ways. They can provide nonpartisan information, including details about the dates polls will open, where voters can find their polling places, and how to find sample ballots. They can publish or share voter guides that include unedited responses to questionnaires about policy issues from all candidates for an office or by participating in nonpartisan candidate forums. Can a nonprofit encourage people to request absentee ballots or vote early? Absolutely. With the pandemic, a record number of North Carolinians are expected to vote by absentee ballot in 2020. The NC State Board of Elections online absentee ballot applications process only takes about 3 minutes to complete, so encourage people to request their absentee ballots now so they receive them with plenty of time. Early voting, October 15 through 31, is a great option because voters don't have to worry about going to the right polling place and can vote even if they've moved since the last election. Early voting is the safest way to guarantee your ballot will be counted. In the 2016 election, 99.8% of voters who used early voting had their votes counted, as opposed to 98% who voted on election day. Can a nonprofit acknowledge an incumbent who is running for re-election who comes to a Zoom fundraising event? Yes, but be careful. It is common for elected officials to show up at nonprofit programs and fundraising events. Typically, nonprofits acknowledge officials who participate in these events. If a nonprofit is holding an event in the period leading up to an election, organizational leaders should be careful not to mention officials' candidacies for re-election during this type of acknowledgement. It is also good practice to keep the acknowledgement short and simple to avoid the appearance of endorsing the official's re-election campaign. Can a nonprofit identify candidates who are supportive of its mission without explicitly endorsing them? No. Identifying candidates for office as being in favor of or opposed to a policy position is an implied endorsement of the candidates or an implied criticism of candidates who take a position seemingly contrary to the quote-unquote correct position. This is particularly true if the description of candidates is a broad and subjective one. Likewise, businesses can create confusion or reputation harm if they identify candidates as pro-business or supportive of their industry. If you have other questions about what nonprofits or their leaders can do before the election, we have posted more questions and answers on the blog on the center's website. And in nonprofit news, big fundraiser for Coastal North Carolina camps. The pandemic has been brutal on North Carolina's camps who count on the swarms of kids in the summer to remain in operation. Two of the state's most loved camps are Camp Seagull, boys, and Camp Seafarer, girls, on the coast about half an hour from New Bern. Seagull dates to 1948, and both camps draw from up and down the East Coast. The camps, run by the YMCA, launched a 48-hour challenge to raise money. The camps announced September 18 that 1,123 donors stepped up to donate $607,930. Thank you, camp community, for your tremendous generosity, the camp said in an email. Your support will make a huge difference for the future of camp. This community is special because of you. ALS fundraiser a success with new virtual event. The North Carolina chapter of the ALS Association held its annual walk as a fundraiser September 12, and the organization has already raised 88% of its goal of $850,000. Usually, the ALS chapter would have six on-site walks across the state, but decided this year to go with a virtual event with a superhero theme. The event included heavy social media engagement and live streaming of events. Chief Operating Officer Dave Shore says the goal was to transform the event into something totally different, and the walks will continue through the end of the year. He says the North Carolina chapter was really pleased at the turnout, and the virtual approach provided a broader reach. It really allowed us to give a sense of urgency and hit people and areas of that state we normally wouldn't have in those on-site walks, Shore says. It's important to note that during these COVID times, we have not cut back or stopped any of the funding that helps the ALS clinics, patients, and caregivers with what they need, he says. That says a lot for those who support us throughout the state, he says. Event honors those who support children's education in North Carolina. The Child Care Services Association celebrated its Triangle Child Care Awards with a virtual event September 18. Every 2 years, CCSA gathers community leaders, child care providers, and advocates to celebrate those who work to ensure the Triangle's children receive the highest quality of early care and education. CCSA presented three awards. Senator Floyd McKissick Jr. and the Reverend Michael Page won the Public Service Award. Pam Dowdy won the Dorothy B. Graham Award. And Graciela Munoz from Spanish for Fun in Chapel Hill won the Mary Y. Bridgers Early Childhood Teacher Award. These award winners remind us that good things can happen for young children in child care, Head Start, and public school settings, that leadership for early childhood is needed and can be found in all settings, and that leadership and advocacy matter, says Marcia Baslow, president of CCSA. There is a lot at stake in early childhood right now. Increased funding for early childhood programs is a significant need. If families can't go back to work due to the lack of available child care, the economy can't and won't recover. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, New Loan Program Needed for Businesses Before It's Too Late. What got me to jump back on the Paycheck Protection Program issue was a note from a small business owner who declared she cannot keep her six-year-old apparel boutique open for the next 2 months until the elections if there's no help. The plight of small businesses were masked for a while because consumers kept spending as people who were out of jobs received $600 a week in additional federal unemployment benefits over and above their unemployment checks from their state government. Now, that $600 weekly windfall has stopped, and so has the shopping spree. Yes, as a stopgap measure, millions of those who were laid off are receiving a weekly $300 check to offset the $600 loss, but numbers are emerging that show the money flow is weakening downstream across retailers, restaurants, DIY shops, and household staples, and that $300 will only last 6 weeks and would expire in a couple of weeks, too. With the money spigot drying, the nation's small businesses are in deep trouble. Cardify.ai, a market research firm that tracks debt and credit card spending among jobless people, concluded spending has sharply reduced among that group. Government data already points out that last month's retail sales growth has dampened, and the numbers are going to be worse in September. Retail sales grew an anemic 0.6% last month, falling below expectations. Little more than 5.2 million businesses received almost $540 billion from the government's PPP initiative launched in April. That program has concluded, but as the latest Government Accountability Office notes, the money is almost gone for small businesses with under 10 employees that received less than $150,000 in PPP loans. With the November elections looming and a bitter fight between Democrats and Republicans expected over the timing of filling Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's Supreme Court seat, there's virtually no talk about additional COVID-19 aid for small businesses, local governments, healthcare facilities, or anyone else. It's a risk we simply cannot afford at this time. Data released by Yelp on September 16 shows that out of the 32,100 restaurants that have been closed since the beginning of March, 61% are permanent. For shopping and retail establishments, the numbers are almost identical, almost 31,000 closures, of which 58% are permanent. As of last week, 42% of beauty salons and spas that closed in the past 6 months will never open again. And 54% of the 6,500 bars that have closed are never coming back. In all, about 163,000 businesses have closed as of August, and a big portion of these establishments qualified for PPP money. So if businesses fail or consumers choose not to spend, landlords don't have enough money to pay their loans, and the next wave of closures will result in loan delinquencies in the coming weeks. Creditors will close hotels, motels, and developments at an extraordinary pace because of missed payments. That also would affect banks' loan portfolios, forcing federal regulators to intervene in a way that may not exude supreme confidence in the U.S. economy. Think the stock market will still show robust gains when the default tremors spread across multiple industries? Our lawmakers in Washington are struggling to picture the catastrophic downstream effect of not listening to small businesses. The time to show bipartisan agreement for an economic relief bill, of any kind really, is now. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to some general news stories. Downtown Cary Park project takes big step toward fruition as plans submitted for approval. This is written by Caleb Harshberger. After nearly two decades, the much-anticipated Downtown Cary Park project took a big step forward this month with the submission of site plans as the design phase stays on track to close at the end of the year. Plans have been in the works since 2001 and currently include 7 acres of open space and amenities such as water features, a plaza, dog parks, and pet-friendly space, an arena, botanical gardens, as well as a pavilion. This is a 7-acre park and state-of-the-art space, says Joy Innes, Downtown Cary Park General Manager. It's really the first of its kind in North Carolina. The amenities are connected by looping walking paths and trails, and it says the park plans to host a wide variety of events and programs while still making plenty of room for visitors looking for a quiet place to relax. Since coming on earlier this year, she's been immersed in the design process as she prepares to run the day-to-day operations in the years to come. There are so many places coming together, she says, to see the structures in drawing form and rendering form, and then to go out and stand in the park space and think, where do these structures go? It's been really interesting. The total cost of the project is estimated to be around $50 million, and town officials hope to begin construction next year, with a dedication expected in the fall of 2023. The idea for the park began in 2001 with the passage of the Town Center Area Plan, which included a proposal for a town center park. Over the next 17 years, town staff and officials worked on the project as different voices built up the vision through a process that at times could feel precarious. It's amazing. For 20 years, it's gone through all these cycles and revolutions, says Doug McRaney, Cary's Director of Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Resources. People always have various visions, and you didn't know how it was going to come out. Shipbuilder picks Virginia over North Carolina for 250 jobs. And this article is written by Lauren Onisorge. A naval shipbuilder has picked Virginia over North Carolina for what it's calling an unmanned systems center of excellence. Huntington Ingalls Industries is bringing 250 jobs to Hampton, Virginia. According to a release sent September 23 by Virginia Governor Ralph Northam's office, North Carolina was a contender for the project, a fact confirmed by a spokesman for the North Carolina Department of Commerce. It wasn't immediately clear what site in North Carolina was being considered for the expansion. Huntington Ingalls didn't return a request to comment on the choice. In a statement, Governor Northam called the investment a powerful testament to Virginia's workers and business environment. It's also more validation for economic incentives as Virginia approved a performance-based grant of $1.5 million from the Virginia Investment Performance Program, as well as a $1.5 million grant from the Commonwealth's Opportunity Fund to assist the city of Hampton with the project. It wasn't immediately clear whether North Carolina offered a competing incentive package. Huntington Ingalls is headquartered in Newport News, Virginia. In Greensboro, Centric Brands landlord anticipates no local impact from bankruptcy. And this article is from the Triad Business Journal. While news of Centric Brands filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy may have come as a shock to some in the Triad, at least one stakeholder in the company's presence in the region believes Centric's reorganization effort will have no impact in the Triad. The New York-based fashion and lifestyle brands company moved its Greensboro operations in 2019 from an office building in Grandover to Old Greensboro Gateway Center, where it occupies nearly 50,000 square feet at the former Bluebell plant at 620 South Elm Street. Centric Brands was born of the acquisition of a significant portion of Global Brands Group and holds licenses to brands including Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, Nautica, Kate Spade, Michael Kors, Disney, Marvel, and more. Although its more than 200 local employees have been largely absent from the renovated space in downtown Greensboro during COVID-19, Old Greensboro Gateway Center owner Andy Zimmerman doesn't expect any bankruptcy-related impact going forward. "They have told me their holiday orders have exceeded their projections," he says. "They have been great to communicate with me and assure me of the importance of the Greensboro location." And we'll stop there as the rest of the article goes into details on the background of the business. And we'll finish with the Business Survey Pulse. The question, what's the best style of North Carolina barbecue? 127 responses. 72% say Eastern. 22% say Western, and 6% say Southern. And actually, we'll stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored, so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.